Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we are joined in studio by Vijay Singh, the new CEO of Vermont Public. We'll find out what he's learned so far during his first 2.5 months on the job, leading an organization that employs more than 100 people. Before coming to Vermont, he was the chief operating and content officer at Cap Radio, an NPR affiliate in Sacramento, during a rather tumultuous time for the station. He began his career as a documentary filmmaker, and he grew up in upstate New York. So this is something of a homecoming for him. Vijay, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Vijay, before we talk about the station, I want to hear a little bit more about you and your background. You started out making documentary films. What interested you about that medium?
I think the human part of storytelling is always really interesting, and that was the focus of those documentaries. I think being able to tell stories, the impact that stories carry, is really what drew me to the medium of documentary filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of films did you make?
So it was made for Muna Broadcasting, Korean-American station, especially focused out west at the time. And it was about the sort of migrant issues in South Korea, as well as immigrant issues in the United States. It was a series of documentaries that we were working on.
Mm. And you're a big film buff. Is
Absolutely,
that right?
Yes.
Okay. There's a couple of you all floating around at Vermont Public. I'm always like overhearing these conversations about titles I've never heard of before. What kinds of movies are you drawn to?
Oh, all kinds. I have a broad taste. I like everything from big budget Hollywood blockbusters to art house cinema. I think taste, especially film, but across any medium, is so personal. But I have a really broad taste, I think.
Mm. What's the latest movie that you've seen that you've loved?
Oof, that's tough.
Could be in theater or something at home.
You know, I rewatched The King of Comedy, Scorsese's movie from the late 80s, I think. It was really nice to revisit that one.
Nice. Well, you grew up in upstate New York. What made you want to move back to this part of the country from the West Coast, other than this great job, of course?
So I moved out back to the Northeast before I had this job, and before I even knew it was available. My wife had an incredible opportunity in the Northeast. It was a homecoming for me. I've always thought I would return to the Northeast for all kinds of different reasons. So it was partly personal, but when I saw this opportunity, it made it that much more worthwhile.
Mm. And are there a lot of similarities between where you grew up and Vermont Public's geographic area, or do you see them as pretty different spaces?
They're similar, but the longer I've been here, it's a short amount of time, but the more I get to know Vermont, I can see how distinct it is. But the similarities, you know, where I grew up, it's about an hour and a half northwest of New York City. And people further north in New York would still consider us downstate, but everyone in New York City considers us clearly upstate. But it's very, very rural, low income. And in those ways, I think a lot of Vermont is similar-ish. Like, I have a sense of what Vermont is. But the more I'm here, you know, the opportunity I have is to get to know Vermont with fresh eyes. So while it feels familiar, I can still kind of spot a lot of things that, at least to me, are new or different or feel distinct from the Hudson Valley of New York.
Mm. Yeah. So your parents came to the Hudson Valley after immigrating from Guyana. Did their experiences moving to the United States, your experiences being the child of immigrants, do you feel like that's shaped you and how you approach media?
Interesting. I hadn't really thought about media specifically, but no doubt. I mean, I remember Saturday mornings, my grandmother, my mom having a Bollywood movie on, thinking of the strong British influence in Guyana. It was a British colony for a long time. Those things, again, no doubt shaped my how I formed my taste in media, how I perceive media overall. But really, I think more so my adolescence in an immigrant household in a low-income rural area of the United States, I think that is probably had more of an impact in my view and my how I interact with media.
In what ways?
It is, you know, we didn't have as many options as other folks might, just let's say purely based on income. Public media really was a connection to the world for me. Starting with Sesame Street, certainly. But I remember when I was able to get my first job in high school, and I was able to, you know, I had a lot of time in my car driving around to and from work or school, and I listened to the local station there, and that was again sort of a vision into the rest of the world, where my world at the time felt pretty small. Growing up in a rural area in upstate New York, it can feel small, especially again being in an immigrant household where there aren't many other folks like me around. That was a connection point for sure.
Yeah, you talked about the British influence and watching Bollywood growing up. Were you also a cricket fan by any chance? I know you're a big sports fan now.
My family tried to explain the rules of cricket to me, and I'm afraid I still don't quite understand them. I became a basketball fan pretty quickly. So where I wasn't adopting a lot of the whether it was cricket or tennis or anything like that, I think basketball really drew me in.
Mm. I want to return to that later, but first let's hear a little bit more about your career. And listeners, if you have a question for our CEO, the CEO of Vermont Public, Vijay Singh, you can call in at 800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So Vijay, you came to us from California. You were working for a time in product development at KPCC, which has since rebranded as LAist, and it's an NPR member station in Los Angeles. Product development is a pretty profit-driven area of work. Is that part of your focus here at Vermont Public, building products that are going to make the station more money?
Partly. I think it is unrealistic to think about continuing to deliver all of the excellent things we deliver for the entire state of Vermont without being realistic about how we continue to function as a business, meaning where the revenue comes from. But when you are like my background in product development, starting at LAist, was really about marrying the idea of return on investment, making sure that the products we create are bringing in revenue, with impact, mission impact. And I think that's distinct about being a nonprofit media organization. Impact is what we're after, while, again, being cognizant and realistic about where the revenue comes from. So it's tying those two things together.
Mm. And can you talk to folks a bit who might not be aware of that? This is a little bit of like public media insider baseball, but I do think it's really interesting and relevant to the media landscape that we live in. When you were there, LAist rebranding and the incorporation of the pre-existing LAist blog from the Gothamist Network into that station. It was a really big deal. It changed a lot about how that station works and how audience members interact with the news and media coverage that they did there. Can you talk a little bit more about your experiences with that?
Sure. I think the idea was to recognize changing audience habits. I mean, this was almost a decade ago, but I was in charge of product development, especially on the digital end of things. And acquiring that brand, LAist, was a digital-first brand. Now, I think the challenge then and now was balancing our commitment to our broadcast audience while continuing to invest and spin up services for digital natives or folks who would only interact with LAist.com. And so it was a sea change. It really was a philosophical shift in how that organization functioned. And again, they're still working on how to strike the correct balance there today.
Mm, yeah. The station that I worked at before coming to Vermont Public, WAMU, it went through something similar with the counterpart to LAist, DCist, and it really changed a lot of the focus of the station and kind of flipped back and forth between, are we a radio station? Are we on? Are we digital first? And that's part of this broader change that's going on in the news and media landscape as organizations like ours struggle to attract younger audiences to our online platforms. And Vermont Public is also navigating this issue. But our station in some ways in a very unique way, is also serving this rural and older audience that really relies on our traditional broadcast services. Do you have any plans to scale back broadcast in order to try to attract younger audiences to our digital products?
Not exactly. I think I would frame it a little bit differently from, and it is very popular to say digital first, and understandably so. Again, if we look at the changing habits across media, I get that framing. I think the right approach for Vermont Public, and I think this has existed and will continue to drive this point forward, is audience first, service first. And if we take that approach, we will improve our service across all of our platforms. We are a multimedia organization. So for folks who find us most useful on broadcast, and by extension, digital things on broadcast, like or digital extensions of broadcast like live streams, we will continue to improve. At the same time, we have to recognize there is an audience that we have not yet built loyalty with, and that's the digital audience. But again, it's a balance of doing both of those things really well.
Mm. Let's go to a member of our audience now. We have a caller, Amanda, in Montpelier. Amanda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and hi, BJ, and Michaela. So it's funny because you just said something about the digital thing, and my question is that because I can listen to all the podcasts anytime, you know, like all the ones that you have on the radio, is that I miss just the old style of having like a music, like someone playing music. You know what I mean? Like, because now, like I miss having Robert Resnick during the day on Sunday, and now it's like late at night. But just having where you have to be like by your smart device or in the car, you're like, you plan your day to listen to a certain DJ, you know, play music. Like I know in the North Country, they used to have some great music shows over there in New York. Mm. And I just missed that. Like I like now it's just like, I'm like, it's all the same news. And so I don't listen anymore. I mean, I listen to your show cause it's fun and local, but other than that, like I was like, it's just the same stuff. They say the same stuff.
Mm. Thank you, Amanda. I'm hearing two different things in there. Let's start with that note about kind of podcasts versus broadcast and maybe wanting some music, arts and culture style offerings from our station, VJ.
Yeah, I think what we offer is larger than news. News is a cornerstone of what we do. It is essential. We are part of Vermont's information infrastructure. And so we'll never step away from that. But I think we do have to recognize that there's a lot of news burnout. And really to foster a healthy ecosystem of media consumption, we should honor the entire audience lifestyle. And so whether it's music or arts and culture or other things, you know, on our TV station, we do offer especially and on our radio broadcasts and on podcasts, sort of an entertainment angle. It is enriching content that is part of our mission, but I think that is a really important part of what we're doing, and we intend to only enhance that aspect outside of news and journalism. Mm.
So no Robert Resnick music podcast coming down the pipe just yet.
Can't promise that exactly, but again, stuff outside of news or adjacent to it is certainly stuff we want to look at.
Yeah. It's a tough balance that we're all trying to hit here because, Amanda, I totally hear you. It can be really hard to listen to our own station day in and day out and hear the difficult stories that are being shared. But at the same time, we want to be informed. We want to keep people informed. And that's the news of the world. How do you balance that for yourself, VJ?
It's tough. I honestly there I don't know if I have a good balance. I spend a lot of time consuming our own products as well as competitive products and just getting a sense of how media works by being a user of it. And so in that sense, I probably spend too much time consuming, especially news in all its forms. Yeah. I find my outlet, I think, with movies, video games, sports. And so, again, as a provider of media, I think it is only right for us in being service and audience first to recognize that lots of other folks, even if they don't consume as much media as I do, they're looking for a break every so often, or they're looking to balance the growth that comes with being very informed, with a chance to rest and recuperate, and whatever that means to them.
Yeah. And to speak for myself, I feel really lucky to work in local news because it feels so so tangible, and I feel so connected to the community that I'm lucky enough to report on and be a part of here in this region. How committed are you as our CEO to retaining our current level of local news coverage?
I think it's a key differentiator. We are part of a really healthier than other places, I should say. Journalism is having a tough time across the country and the world. But Vermont is kind of unique compared to the other markets I have been in, not just Vermont Public, but other players in Vermont like Digger and 7 Days and many other even more local publications. It is a healthy place to be, but it is only healthy because we are all players in it. And so I think we make our entire information ecosystem stronger by being committed to our local coverage. And in fact, again, if we're taking that audience and service first approach, our local coverage is essential. We do a lot of things that I think change people's lives. I don't want to be grandiose about what we do, but I think it is true that you would not find some of the information we provide anywhere else. And that's really important. We are committed to that for sure.
Vijay, we just got an email from a listener named Peter who wants to know if you have noticed that public media has been, quote, absolutely obsessed with Donald Trump for the last number of years, even through the Biden presidency. And Peter wants to know if there's any way that you can encourage reshaping political coverage to move away from the cult culture and move back to a more objective and broad-based way to look at current events. What do you think of that comment, Peter? Or excuse me, Vijay.
It's a very interesting question and framing from Peter. I think it is right in a lot of respects. Now, I think President-elect Trump dominates media in intentionally in a lot of ways, but I mean he is a figure that commands news, and therefore I don't know that we can ever entirely step away from it. But the point being, in our approach and my influence on it, certainly my role as CEO here, I do have some connections and some influence on the sort of national networks that we work with, and that is part of the conversation. But more importantly, I think here in our approach, what we have more direct control over. Being really cognizant, again, of what is going on in everyday people's lives and really trying to reflect that. Now, does that mean we will never cover Trump and future policies from the next administration and how that affects people in Vermont? Of course not. We have to do that. That is, again, there are going to be things that are newsworthy. But as long as we focus on people's lives and what really matters to them on a day-to-day level, I think we can navigate that with better balance than it may feel right now, especially coming from our national partners.
Yeah. So we at Vermont Edition and in the Vermont Public Newsroom really try our best every day to be an independent and fact-based news source. But there is this pretty widespread perception out there that NPR and by extension Vermont Public are left-leaning and wear our staff members, sometimes our reporters, progressive values on our sleeves. Do you agree with that perception? And if so, does it concern you?
I don't necessarily agree with the perception, but I understand that it exists. That is a reality for a lot of folks, and I think that is a problem for us that we have to address. It does not mean that we will step away from being fact-based and presenting the news that people need to hear. But at the same time, if that perception exists, it does exist, that means there are a lot of folks who will never tune in to what we do, and they'll never get a lot of critical information that is a lot of times not political at all, whether you perceive it to be biased in any way. And so that's an issue for us. We have to solve for that.
Well, let's go back to the phones here. We have Tina calling in from Clarendon. Tina, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been a Vermont Public listener for a very long time, long time. And I enjoy NPR immensely, but my concern or my I regret that what used to make Vermont Public's VPR so Vermont were some of the smaller inserts that used to occur. There was a feature where people would read an essay. They were Vermonters, and it would be on any topic. It wasn't very long, but it was really interesting. So, you know, as they say, driveway moments. And the other one, there used to be a nature show where two people would be out in the woods or on a river or, you know, doing something outside that was intrinsically Vermont. There's a show on now called Bird Note, which is very nice, but it's very frustrating because it's not really local and it's too short. So I miss the things that made Vermont Public Vermont, not the same as an NPR station in any of the other markets in the country.
Well, thanks for your comment, Tina. Vijay?
I think that's exactly right. And we, in looking at the changes we might make going forward, it's to improve our service, and that can mean a lot of different things, right? But I think part of what was just referenced is an idea of connecting to place. And at Vermont Public, especially when we consider our digital footprint, we are global. And what makes us stand out to audiences are we will always be focused and intend to serve people in Vermont first, no question. But we have an opportunity to connect with lots of people and tell the story of Vermont in lots of interesting ways. And I think that can serve both folks here in Vermont as well as people nationally and globally.
Well, thanks, Tina, for calling in. Judy in Burlington, you're up next. Judy, go ahead. Judy, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to hear more about the current situation in Syria.
News of the current conflict in Syria. Well, maybe, Vijay, this is a good chance for you to talk a little bit about the differences between NPR's coverage and Vermont Public's and the kind of work that we do versus what listeners hear over the NPR programming.
Yeah, I think we rely on our national partners, NPR and PBS, to cover national and global news. We also bring in other content like BBC. And that allows us to do what we're best at, which is focus locally. Now, I hear the question or the request here, and that is, again, I have a part to play in that. I do have connections with and I have opportunities to talk to our national partners about their coverage choices and so on. So all of the feedback we get, not just this caller, but all of the feedback we get, I do bring to those types of meetings and the opportunities I have to inform the choices made at the national level.
Well, thank you, Judy, for calling in. If you have a question for our CEO of Vermont Public, Vijay Singh, you can call as well at 800-639-2211 or email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Vijay, we are about a month away from Donald Trump being inaugurated as president again for his second term. What, if anything, could change for public media and for member stations like Vermont Public under this new administration? Are you expecting or preparing for any significant changes, for example, with our government funding?
We have to wait and see what happens, but we are starting to plan for certain possibilities. So we get about 10% of our operational budget here from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That is a grant from the federal government, and we actually, 10% is significant for us. If that funding were to go away, it would mean a lot of changes for us. But across the network of public media, there are the majority of stations rely really heavily on that, if not 100% on that funding. So for public media overall, if that funding were to go away, it would be detrimental. But we here at Vermont Public are starting to plan for that. It is forward funded by 2 years. So if it were to go away, it would be 2026. And so we're making plans accordingly. But I think it is, we have to wait and see what happens. I think prognosticating too far out is dangerous in its own way.
But 10%, that's a lot. That would change a lot of how we work here.
Yes, absolutely. And I think We have a lot of things to work on in terms of our funding overall. Today, About 60% of our funding comes from individuals. That's folks in our community who support us directly, business sponsorships, but local connections. And I think continuing to invest in that, to grow in that area, is our path forward, so that whether it's CPB funding or other changes that we cannot predict today, we'll be able to weather that storm, whatever it may be, and continue to deliver on our excellent service.
Well, let's go back to the phones here. We have Michael calling in from Windsor now. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Michaela. Thank you. I would like to request that you consider bringing back a show like the Glass Bead Game.
The Glass Bead Game. I'm not familiar with that. Can you tell us about it?
I think it was locally produced in Windsor, and it was just an eclectic collection of music and spoken word, and I don't remember fully, but I do remember really, really enjoying it. And so it was different than traditional shows you have now, and maybe you could find it among your archives and look at it and see if it's something you would consider resurrecting. I think what may have happened was it was so unique that when your quality control people did a survey of listener preferences, it may not have done so well. It didn't mean it was a bad show. It just it was a bad audience. And so
I like that. I like that framing, Michael. That's what I'll say next time I get some tough feedback. It's not the show, it's the audience. So I'm not familiar with this show, Vijay. I'm not sure if you are, but I hear Michael asking for maybe more locally produced, very eclectic, quirky content. It's a similar request to a caller that we had earlier.
Yeah, and it's a fair request and something that we do want to lean into more. Like we are a small but mighty group, and we cover the entire state, so we have to be careful about our resource investments. But highlighting what makes Vermont unique and bringing out the quirkiness or uniqueness of Vermont, we want to lean into that for sure. And how we will do that, I think, is today we already have a community forum. This is a group of folks from across the state who inform our programming choices and so on. But we want to get even shorter feedback loops in what we're creating and how we're creating and so on. And so we may not bring back the Glass Bead show directly, but I think this shorter feedback loop and continuing to work with folks like our community forum will inform some of the shows or other things that you will hear and see on all of our platforms.
So as you keep mentioning, Vijay, Vermont Public is not just a radio station or a website or a TV station. We do it all. Your predecessor in this role, Scott Finn, oversaw this big merger between Vermont Public Radio with Vermont PBS. And that brought a lot of change to the organization, including the new name, Vermont Public. Do you see that organization or that merger as done? Are our organizations fully merged?
I think so. There may be a different perception based on some folks here on staff, and I understand. But it was the right thing to do. We are a much stronger organization as one versus having two distinct organizations doing similar things. And in 2024 and beyond, we have to think in public media as multimedia organizations. So there's a lot of benefit, the benefits of scale, even though, again, we're small, but there's still benefits of scale in different ways. That said, there is a core philosophical difference between thinking of ourselves as either a radio station, a TV station, or what I would pose us as is a multimedia organization. And so growing into that, I think there's still some work to be done there. So while coming in new, I have the benefit of seeing it as a singular organization. I totally understand that there's more work ahead of us to continue to cement that idea.
Jim from Morristown just wrote with a question. They want to know, why don't I ever hear Vermont Public mention the tens of millions of dollars it raised from selling its spare frequencies? What is the status of those funds? And one example of that is Vermont Public selling one of its broadcast licenses, WVTA, back in 2017 to the FCC for about $56 million.
That is an essential part of our operational budget. So our investment fund, we do take draws from. And that, it's kind of what makes Vermont Public a little distinct from a lot of other public media organizations across the country. They are feeling the heat of all of these changes in media and sort of a drop-off in donor dollars and so on. We've done a pretty good job in that respect, but we definitely take some draws from our investment fund. And our board approved a very strategic approach to how we do that. We have a three-year investment or draw from this investment fund to expand into digital. And so a very, very clear, decisive decision to or approach there. We know over time that we need to change what our draw is. But in order to help us get a footing in the digital landscape, we rely on that investment fund for sure.
Yeah. Vijay, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your time at CAP Radio in Sacramento's Region's NPR station. When you were there, it was a tough time for the station because of some issues that had preceded you. The leadership cut staff by 12%. This audit found that there was a pretty dramatic misuse of funds during the years of mismanagement that, again, occurred before your time there. But I'm curious what you learned from that period of being CAP Radio that you bring with you here today.
I think there are two things that really stand out to me. One is seeing we fought for our lives that summer. Any given day, we could have gone out of business. And seeing imagining what that would have been like for such a important institution in the community to evaporate and disappear. That had an impact on me. It's part of what brought me back to wanting to work in public media, making sure that public media is around for generations to come. The second point was what is our biggest asset, which is our community and the support that we get from the people that we serve. Because we could have gone out, we should have gone out of business any day that summer. But it was really the board, the Sacramento State University, everyone on staff, and most importantly, our community who had our backs. And we would not have made it if it weren't for the community. But that is the beauty and the power of public media.
Yeah. Well, Vijay, we have just a couple minutes left with you, and I want to make sure we hit a very important topic, which is Vermont sports. You are a big sports fan, particularly basketball, and I know you've been going to a number of Catamounts games. What's it been like getting to know those teams?
Oh, it's awesome. I love basketball in general. I also love the energy of a small gym. So it's really nice to see the games live. And they're awesome teams. I mean, it's a awesome experience.
Did you follow any of the UVM men's soccer team's championship run?
Of course. And congrats to that team. It's an amazing thing for UVM and for the state of Vermont.
And lastly, Vijay, I wonder if you could just tell us one thing that you're really excited about for the short-term future of Vermont Public and your work here.
The sort of the passion that this team has, you know, being an outside audience member as I was preparing for this job, I got the general sense of it, as I think a lot of our audience does. But being here for the past 3 months almost, getting to see how hard everybody works every day to deliver on things that are special projects or things that we do that are sort of more daily routines, from people who make our content to people who get us on air or people who do back office things. The passion and the grit that people bring to this work is really impressive. And what's ahead of us is challenging. It is not an easy thing to improve our broadcast service while we venture into more distinctive digital native offerings. But knowing the mentality that folks have here, I love it. It's the same mentality I have. We are high achievers. And so it gives me a lot of hope. It is not an easy road, but it gives me hope knowing the passion that people bring to this work every day.
Vermont Public CEO Vijay Singh, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
What class are you? It's a straightforward question, but depending on who you ask, it can be a touchy subject. But these are the waters in which Vermont Public reporter Erica Heilman likes to wade. For the past few years, she's been talking with Vermonters about class as part of an ongoing series. A new crop of stories comes out this week. You can find them soon, if they're not there already, on vermontpublic.org. She joins me now to talk about them. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
So we first had you on Vermont Edition back in November of 2022 to talk about your first few stories in this series. And that was right when you started going around and asking people, what is class and what class are you? What is class, Erica?
You know, I don't have a very academic definition, and I don't ask the question in any academic sense. I think the question elicits really interesting answers. And so that's sort of the sum total of, you know, that is my justification for the question. But it yields, you know, how much money do you have and or don't have? Who gets to do club lacrosse after school and who doesn't? It's about education, about what kind of education you've had. You know, there's school education, and then there are other kinds of education that happen if you don't go to school. So class seems to get into all of these areas. And we don't talk about these differences because it's rude, but all these distinctions, these class and cultural distinctions, they're present everywhere, and they're formative, and we don't name them. So I don't know. I think that we are getting better at talking about diversity, racial and gender, and you know, we're getting better, as we should, at talking about these things. But I think we leave class and cultural diversity out of that conversation too much, and I think that that it has to be included in conversations about diversity, because I think these distinctions are at the heart of a lot of problems that we're seeing now, not just in Vermont, but all over the country.
You've done a number of these stories now, Erica. What makes you want to keep going with this series and learn more?
I mean, I think that I will keep doing it so long as it yields good, useful conversations. And then when it doesn't, I won't. So I don't know how long I'll keep doing it, but I keep doing it because it continues to surprise me what people say.
So you talked to 5 Vermonters in this new set of stories. We have a couple clips to play from some of those conversations. I'd like us to start with Damien. Before we hear Damien's voice, tell us a little bit about him.
Damien is awesome. And it was actually a UVM professor who told me that he had seen, I think on Facebook, that there was this guy selling Kurt Schilling's desk. I went over to talk to him. He lives close to where I do, to talk about the desk. And we ended up having this long conversation about class, because it turns out that we're exactly the same age. And we both grew up in Vermont. And so we just compared notes. And that was, it was an amazing conversation.
Let's take a listen to a segment of that conversation now.
I think white collar makes more money. They work in an indoor environment, office scenario.
Do they know more than people who are blue collar?
When it comes to insurance issues, yeah. When it comes to fixing a house, no. When it comes to changing a flat tire, no. You know, a white collar, they're going to call AAA.
You don't think you want to fix your tire anymore if you're white collar?
If I didn't have to pull the engine out of my Suburban and rebuild it and learn how to rebuild YouTube University, if I didn't have to, I would have paid somebody to do it. But if you talk to some insurance guy and ask him to come help wire your house, he would be clueless. And that person being clueless is the way I feel on the other side of the spectrum of people that come from an education. When they ask me something about what's general, I don't get it. I'm not from that school. But the American dream is not to be low class.
Erica, one of the things I love about this clip is that he's making such a salient point, but it's also really funny. And it's such a breath of fresh air to like have that exhale when you're talking about something as intense as class. Yes. And just get to laugh and be like, how absurd is all of this?
Yeah, no, he is gifted. He is a gifted orator.
You also spoke to a woman named Katrin. What did you two talk about?
She lives in Lyme, New Hampshire, and she grew up in Lyme, New Hampshire. And Lyme, New Hampshire has changed a great deal since she grew up there in the 70s and 80s. It's just, there's a lot more money there now. So we talked about that. And then she also gets at this, at a really interesting, you know, sorting hat kind of a thing about in school, when kids start to fork off into, you know, ballet lessons and not ballet lessons, and what that does to the culture of a school and to relationships. I just thought that was, yeah, pretty interesting.
Hmm. Let's take a listen to a bit of your conversation with Katrin.
I mean, somebody I think about a lot is my best friend when I was a little girl. We were just, I don't know, super tight. And then something happened. I think it was in fifth grade, and I don't really remember, but I remember that I was doing a lot of theater. And I don't think that that was something that she was maybe interested in. But then when I think back on it, it's like, who were the kids who were like putting on plays with me? It was like all the rich kids. And then she wasn't. But then we stopped being friends.
Oof. I feel that one so deeply. Does friendship come up a lot in these conversations?
Yeah, I mean, there were in this set of five. There, yeah, I mean, in all cases, I think I've spoken with people about when do you remember this awareness, or do you remember a time when you were not aware of, you know, what you have and he doesn't have, or you know, the other way around? When did you become aware of your own circumstance? And almost everybody has an interesting answer to that about when that happened.
Is it hard to convince people to talk to you about class? And does that response vary depending on the class that the person identifies with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to beg. I'm reduced to begging. I beg a lot. But yeah, I mean, the people who have a lot of money don't want to talk about it. As a general rule, it is harder to find people who want to talk about class if they are in a very privileged circumstance. And, you know, the people who don't have much, don't have a lot, or have said to me, you know, what's to lose? So there's that dynamic that I have found in these conversations. So if you're listening, call me up.
What kind of responses do you get from these stories? Wait, after they air, do you feel like are people reaching out to you saying, hey, I want to talk about this?
Yeah, I think Katrin was one of those people. They're yes, people have written with their stories about their own circumstances growing up, and you know, the rubbing points of cultural and class divisions in their lives. Yeah, I think people are kind of hungry to talk about these things because we don't want to be siloed, you know, into these socioeconomic strata. People want to talk about this, and I don't entirely understand why that is. I don't think this is a conceit of mine. I think that we know that there's a nerve there that we have to start learning how to touch, you know? I think that's what it is. And my hope is that these conversations, just in a little way, help people to, you know, find each other across these divides. You know, a great thing about Vermont, you know, is, or at least in my part of Vermont where I live in a small town. We live in towns that are comprised of people from all kinds of circumstances. And that is just a much more interesting place to live. And I think that, you know, we love to talk about community in this state. We love talking about community in Vermont. And if you break it down, you go to your town meeting and somebody invariably is going to raise their hand and they're going to say, I can't afford to pay my taxes anymore. And there's a moment of silence and everybody feels for that person. But then we just move on. And I think there's on a certain level that is about not being able to fully conceive of another person's experience. And part of that has to do with money and culture and where you're from and what you value and prioritize. And I think we have to start really seeing each other for real better than we are.
Well, I think that's such a it's such an interesting thing to think about right now in Vermont too, because I feel like this past election cycle, there was this moment where Vermonters really have started talking more openly about money and taxes and family wealth and how big a deal these things are. And I think we're going to be hearing about that a lot more in this next legislative session. And it's so interesting to see that same kind of messaging echoed in your stories, just told in a very different way.
Yeah, and I think that it helps to not just think about it as rich and poor. I think that we have to start thinking about culture, the diversity of socioeconomic circumstance and culture in the state, because it's rich.
Here's a question, Erica. So after reporting so many of these stories, do you think that a person's class can change? Is class a mutable thing, American dream style in this world that we live in today?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's certainly a lot harder to, I don't think that upward mobility is as available as it once was,
You never know what mindset people are going to be in when they hear a story on the radio. They could be tuning in at any different point in their day. So I guess if you could give a little bit of a preamble or an ask about, how people come to these stories, how people listen and open their ears, what would you say?
That's a great question. I guess I would say that it's an invitation to kind of fall into someone for 6.7 minutes, to fall into someone else's life. These conversations are very personal, and they are very hard won. I mean, these are difficult conversations for people to have, and they invite listeners to experience, to get in the front seat of somebody else's life and really try to imagine what it's like to be them.
Erica Heilman, thank you so much for talking to me about this series.
Thanks a lot, Michaela. I appreciate this conversation.